Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League. Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet, and it's come from Lamella!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I am your host, Skipjack, and we are here just to have a whole lot of fun tonight. We are going to talk, in theory, about the end of Tottenham Hotspur's season. I cannot guarantee that we won't just start talking about The Wire again. This one was pretty brutal. Maybe one of the more brutal days I've ever had as a sports fan, full stop. Leading us off, we have Ben Daniels. Ben, was this result so bad, knowing that one day the universe will experience heat death and no life will be able to exist anywhere?
I would have rather had the heat death of the universe come on Saturday, so I could never have experienced Sunday.
Next up, we have the old man of the podcast, a veteran, one who's seen many Tottenham Hotspur disappointments over the years. We have Brian. Brian, do you think that a do not resuscitate order would have been more helpful than watching this match on Sunday?
I mean, I watched it twice, so maybe.
Were you trying to kill yourself? I mean, there are easier ways to do it.
You know, I just really, really wanted to see if it was a penalty or not. And after watching it 1,800 times, I'm convinced that it still wasn't.
And then finally, we have our resident evil numbers wizard. We have Michael Cayley. Michael, theologians have long argued over the existence of God and whether a kind and loving God would allow suffering and misery to happen in the universe. How do you think they're going to react to that question being settled once and for all this past Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, I think that clearly the sort of classic, like, you know, short answer is that human free will provides a certain kind of good enabling for, you know, human flourishing in the world that in some ways makes at least certain kinds of suffering compatible with a 3-0 God. But I think in this case, the free will involved is clearly the free will of the Premier League in choosing that. In choosing to just cancel all of the games on Sunday. It was an odd choice. I didn't expect it. But I think that a 37-game season is basically just as meaningful and complete as a 38-game season. I don't know why you guys are so down on just, like, canceling the season after 37 games. I mean, Spurs finished second. Everything ended. You know, it would have been nice to see it play out in a normal way. There's going to be an asterisk on this season forever, which is sort of confusing. But otherwise, I think I'm okay with that.
So you still haven't figured out why you woke up on Monday covered in blood and surrounded by half-eaten cans of baked beans?
I ate the rest of the beans.
Okay. That's a rational response, at least. Yeah, so unfortunately, the heat death of the universe did not take place this weekend. Unfortunately, a cruel and vengeful God did not just smite us with lightning. Instead, Tottenham Hotspur lost to Newcastle United, a team, lest we all forget, that had already been relegated and was coached by Rafa Benitez and had Andreas Townsend on it and other players who have played for Newcastle more than one season. We lost to them and thus finished behind Arsenal. It was – I don't know if ugly is an appropriate enough word to describe it. I'm going to go to the person on the podcast who – has suffered the most because of this, because while Michael is living in the blissful ignorance that he has chosen to remain in, and Brian is just, like, happy to have been proven right, Ben has to live with Arsenal fans. So, Ben, how are you holding up?
Not well.
Have you talked to your wife yet?
Not yet. We still cohabitate. We just don't speak anymore.
Do you make eye contact, or the tears just make that?
We're not even in the same room at the same time.
Do you send notices? Do you text in advance so you never the twain shall meet?
She came downstairs. So she was watching upstairs in our room, and I was watching downstairs in the living room. And she came downstairs after the game, and I was just like, you need to go back upstairs. I'm not ready to talk to you.
So everything's great is what you're trying to tell me.
Everything's fine.
This was really devastating, wasn't it?
It was so, so heartbreaking. And it's like, it's just so much worse because it's like the exact same thing we're always accused of doing to like actually not get that monkey off of our back.
Yep.
Is really hard to take.
I mean, if only someone had been telling you for the last 6 months that this was going to end in the most heartbreaking way possible.
God, you're the worst. Michael, do you have any idea what we're talking about?
It sounds like what happened to the Red Sox in 2003, which, you know, I nearly quit on, like, sports fan. I sat there in a bar with coasters ripping I took a coaster, I rip it in half. Tiki Joe's halves, rip them in half. And I just did that nonstop for about an hour in a bar. I looked like an insane, crazy person. And that's the sort of thing I think I would be happening to me if Spurs had basically done the exact same thing on Sunday.
But fortunately, yeah, that didn't happen. So you're doing fine.
But I'm doing fine because, as discussed, the games were canceled, and we'll never know.
I gotta say, this was one, like I said at the top of the show, one of the worst feelings I've had watching sports in my entire life. And I mean, in some ways, it's like it's comforting to know I'm as invested in this team as I think I am, that I had the visceral reaction that I did. But you know, just as soon as I saw that penalty get awarded, it was just, I could just feel the blood drain from my face. And even when we went down 2-0, like I was as Michael's child would say, I was expressing a lot of negativity in the writer's room. I was very negative, but you know, there's a chance. Like, all we had to do was draw. 2-0 is not insurmountable, especially against Newcastle. Eric Lamela makes it 2-1. You know, we still have a chance. But as soon as that penalty got awarded, you knew that unless that got saved, which it probably wouldn't, like, our season was over at that moment. And it was just, I mean, it was brutal. And I'm sure it was even more brutal for people who are, you know, of my age and grew up Spurs fans. But just to see us throw that away, like, to know, like, for weeks we've all comforted ourselves with, if we don't win the title, at least we'll finish above Arsenal. And we don't even have that. And as much as I'm still positive on Pochettino, I'm very angry at him and a lot of our better players for the way they played this weekend. There's definitely some problems and definitely some bad players that shouldn't have been on the pitch, Ryan Mason. But some of our better players did not play well. Pochettino did not manage his team well down the stretch. And it's, I think what happened on Sunday is pretty inexcusable. Ben, has this changed your opinion on the team at all?
No, I mean, it basically tells the same story we've known kind of all along, that our first 11 is good. Our backups are not so good. You know, the fact that we got shit-kicked 5-1 by Newcastle, you know, I didn't see that coming. But basically, the story of this team is the same. It was just tough. I mean, I'm not ready to, like, read into...
Me you know, neither, but it is – I'm not willing to excuse it either. Like, this is
– I mean – no, it's unforgivable, but it doesn't mean that we're a bad team. It doesn't mean we're not going to move on from here. It doesn't mean all the things we thought this season meant. You know, it's just something that the players and the coach and everybody needs to take a hard look at themselves in the mirror and ask themselves, how do you let this happen and how do you make sure it never happens again, ever?
Yeah, players and teams choke – all the time, like, and it's bad when they do it. You don't want to say, oh man, well, we choked and we failed, everything's fine. But like, the reason that they bounce back from it is they don't say everything's fine, but they also don't say, well, this makes us worthless because we choked once.
Michael, do you think, like, do you think this is there's any positives in this for Spurs? Do you think they're going to take a more serious look at this squad and what it needs because of what happened in the last 2 to 3 games? Like, between the meltdown at Chelsea, between I mean, that Newcastle game being – I mean, it's not like they squeaked a win. That was a total disaster. I mean, do you think they're going to look take a bit of a harder look at the squad, or do you think it's not going to affect their summer planning?
I would hope it wouldn't change how they look at the squad. I think that's a much larger sort of objective question that the fact that the team kind of played poorly. I mean, I would hope that the team knew in advance that their backups were bad. Like, that's something that if this team didn't already have plans to not count on Ryan Mason and Tom Carroll next year, you know, I would be very disappointed if that changed anything on that level. The question of whether the team should change anything because people choked, I am, as I said, I think that there are things you can address there. I think you can think about whether, you know, you'd want to have – how you want to think about veteran leadership, how you want to think about how the coach works. If you want to think about the amount of rotation that people need, whether – one thing I wonder with the end – how the season ended is whether these guys who are in such incredible physical shape and were still running their asses off basically until they were mentally drained. Like, to what degree is the mental focus that – OJ demands, how does that get managed for the season? These are things I think we can think about for next year.
And that's so hard to – it's so hard to judge too, because I agree. I don't think there was a physical breakdown, but – and maybe it is just down to how hard they were working all year, but I just think something broke in that Chelsea match. And just between losing the title, losing it – like losing in that way to Chelsea, and just the sort of like, you know, I mean, everyone getting into fights, like more people should have been –
the problem with that narrative is we were really good against Southampton.
Yeah, I don't know, but
the only problem against Southampton was Ryan Mason was there. Like that was a very good team performance that happened to have Ryan Mason in midfield fucking it up. There was no, I do not think I saw a lack of like mental. I mean,
there was that in two out of the last three games.
They create a bunch of good chances. So the problem with the narrative that they broke in Chelsea is then we have a perfectly normal, unlucky Ryan Mason loss in the middle of it before we broke against Newcastle.
But I don't know. I understand what you're saying, and I agree with your sort of breakdown roughly of the Southampton game, but that Chelsea game and that Newcastle game fit awfully neatly together in terms of, like, a problem with this team. And I understand that it's also Moussa Dembele's out, Dele Alli's out, Ryan Mason's there. I understand that, like, that is probably more of the problem than any sort of mental problem, but there is clearly some sort of issue here, and those games do seem of a piece.
Yeah, I'm just saying that just to sort of restate the thing I said before. But I think that thinking about a mental problem is thinking about how you manage people. It's not about like identifying those players who are quote unquote weak. It's about how you make the team strong. I think those are different. One is a much better answer to that problem.
Well, so let's talk about players that make the team weak. Ryan Mason has been very not good for a few matches now. I would hope, because I actually thought it was pretty bad that we picked him in the starting lineup after what happened last week. I mean, Ben, I know you hate Ryan Mason, but I mean, this has got to underscore problems with Pochettino, right? I mean, hopefully, and it seems like he is at least aware of them now because, I mean, he subbed him at halftime, which Pochettino does not usually do, barring fitness problems.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is like, as much as I love Tom Carroll, like, how much better than Ryan Mason is he really? You know, what other options did we really have?
I think he's less risk adverse. I don't think he adds a lot to the team, but at least he's, you know, I just don't think he gets you in the trouble that Ryan Mason gets you into. Maybe he doesn't create the opportunities.
I certainly agree. But, you know, yeah, I agree with that. We're in a situation where basically our backups aren't good or aren't good enough. So picking one out of the other, out of those bad options, is not something I'm like ready to kill Pochettino over. You know, I think he knows Ryan Mason isn't good enough. But you know, what are you going to do?
I would have liked to have seen him start
Tom Carroll.
Yeah,
but he didn't, and you know, it's not an insane decision. There are plenty of Spurs fans who will wrongly say that Ryan Mason is great. So,
not. There's not that many of them left now.
The fact that Ryan Mason has played such a minimal role this season, you know, obviously suggests that Pochettino doesn't think he's that good.
Some of it's due to, like, you know, Pochettino has a habit of a guy gets hurt, and unless they're, like, a key member of the first 11, like Vertonghen, he usually, like, if they're a backup, they usually go to the back of the line. I mean, we sort of saw that with Clinton. We definitely saw it with was Josh hurt or was he just?
After Chadley came back, Onoma's minutes kind of just went away.
Yeah, so,
which again we saw.
I mean, Eriksson and Dembele and Sonny, they all got hurt and they jumped right back into their normal place in line.
I'm just nervous that.
Yep. Vertonghen came straight back.
I hope you guys.
Vertonghen came straight back in the team.
I hope you guys are right. It's just that the way he persisted with Mason after last week against Southampton was just, you know, like, I mean, we're at the point with Mason. I could see a role for Tom Carroll on this team going forward because I think he, you know, certainly against lower league opposition and against maybe sort of the dregs of Europe can offer something. But, you know, Mason is just too destructive to the way this team plays. Certainly in the way Pochettino wants to use him. Maybe there is a, you know, you play him as an advanced midfielder.
When you have a team based on structure and discipline and you throw in a completely undisciplined player like Ryan Mason, like, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, to me, the argument for Carroll. Like, whatever else Carroll does, he seems to at least have an understanding of the structure he's being expected to play in. And he's generally where he's supposed to be. But here we are, me sticking up for Tom Carroll. What have you done, Pochettino? Brian, do you want to gloat?
No, I'm good.
You're fine. You didn't see this coming. Is this precisely how you saw this coming?
No, I expected a lot more Anders Townsend goals. But yeah, no, this is pretty much what I. This isn't even that bad. I mean,
what? This is terrible.
The season when we lost to Chelsea was – or not lost to Chelsea, but missed out on the Champions League because Chelsea won the Champions League was much worse.
I disagree.
Because there's no tangible difference between finishing second and third.
There was nothing we could have done about that. We could have finished above Arsenal. We could have shoved 20 years of the St. Tottering's Day bullshit straight up their ass. And not only could we have done that, it's not like we had to – we were relying on Aston Villa for a result, although we fucking were by the end, but – you know, like, we had this in our hands. We could have controlled this. All we had to do is take care of business, and we could have, like, fucking ended this for at least a year. And at least they couldn't say they've done it for, like, two decades or whatever. And now, because, you know, everyone apparently did a bunch of cocaine before the game, you know, and Ryan Mason is terrible, we were not able to do that. And it's incredibly frustrating. And
so... But I mean, at the end of the day, there's no difference between – I mean, as speaking as someone who doesn't live with an Arsenal fan, there's no difference between us finishing second and third. I mean, we're still guaranteed Champions League group stage games.
There's a difference between finishing above Arsenal and not finishing above Arsenal when it's in
your
own
hands. Done it since 1995, so who gives a shit?
I give a shit. I'm tired of hearing about it.
Yeah, wouldn't you like to not do any – like, we haven't won the league since 1961. That doesn't mean, like, I never want to win the league again.
Well, yeah, but winning the league is a tangible thing. Like, finishing above Arsenal is just, like, pride. And who cares about Twitter?
None of these are real things. We are in no way actually – nothing changes in our bodies when Tottenham Hotspur win. Nothing changes in our economic life. Like, the only thing that's happened is that we have made an emotional connection to a sports team because humans are stupid. And so whatever is meaningful is only meaningful because people think it's meaningful. It's turtles all the way down. So we think that people are invested in Spurs finishing ahead of Arsenal for the exact same reason that people are invested in Spurs winning the league or Spurs making the Champions League, because we're invested in it. There's no further answer to that question.
Because it makes me happy. That's why. It would make me happy to finish above Arsenal and post GIFs of, like, Pochettino making fun of Arsene Wenger. It would be, you know, like today, a great example of that today was, like, Barcelona, for whatever dumb reason, because people are doing this these days, decided to live tweet the 2006 final, Champions League final, as if it were happening today, because that's the new hot trend in social media. And I was just thinking, like, man, how much fun would it be to get in on this and really stick it to some Arsenal fans? But no, I don't want to do that because they're just going to be able to throw this shit back in my face because we bungled it, like Ben said earlier, in the most, like, stereotypical way possible, the thing everyone accuses us of doing. And it's just, oh, God damn it.
I also want to say we've talked a lot about how Ryan Mason's bad. We haven't talked about how Ben Davis is bad, but we also talk about everyone was bad. Like, even our first choice players were bad, and that's a problem.
That is a problem, and I don't know if they were exhausted. My guess is they thought they could roll Newcastle over because they got relegated last week, but you know, I don't know. Maybe it would have been good for us if Newcastle stayed up, because then we would have maybe taken this game fucking seriously. I have no idea. I mean, this is not going to be helpful, because it's a game we don't know why this happened. Yeah. We don't know if it was bad preparation by the coach. We don't know if the players just had a bad mentality because they thought Newcastle got relegated. We don't know if Rafa Benitez devised the perfect plan to make us suck. I doubt that last one happened, but it's just...
I mean, Newcastle have been very competent defensively basically since his second or third week in charge.
Oh.
So them being that's not, you know, yeah, I think we've broken down this game enough.
Yes, we don't need to talk about it. I honestly, I mean, Ben, where does the season rank for you now? Is this affected by it? Is this in a few months? Is this not going to be as big a deal?
I mean, it definitely takes some of the gloss off the season, but it is still the best season I have ever seen this team have. So,
I would agree with that. It's probably not the most. I would imagine you found the 09 season a little more satisfying, just because it ended on a high note, but.
Yeah, well, it actually ended on us getting our asses kicked by Burnley.
All right, but didn't matter. So.
Right. It's strange how much the momentum impacts things. Like, if we were coming from behind to finish where we did, instead, like, if second was in our sights and we missed it, you know, yeah. Okay.
You rearrange this. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. You rearrange the games a little bit, and we end up with the exact same result. It's just the manner that it happened feels bad. But the fact is we finished third in a season we were expected to finish fifth at best. You know, we had a real title challenge. We were fucking the best team in the league for a large stretch of the season. You know,
it was a team that looked like it's sustainable for at least the short time being. This isn't like 09, 010, where we just sort of hit a bunch of people's primes all at the same time.
Right. We're still building something. Like, all of the good things are still good. This was a good season. It could have been better. It would have been nice if it was.
It was almost much better, which is, I guess, the really aggravating
thing. But the fact that it wasn't, or that it ultimately wasn't as good as we wanted it to be, as it could have been, doesn't mean that it wasn't great. It's really hard to remember that in the face of, you know, where we are right now, but...
Yeah, I think once, you know, I'm watching international football in a month, unfortunately, and, like, you know, transfer rumors start genuinely flying around, you know, this will become easier to forget. But it's going to get real annoying when we have to play Leicester and Arsenal again next year, so. I don't know. I mean, Brian, where's the season stand with you now that it's over?
I mean, this is a massive success. I mean, you know, at the beginning of the season, we expected to challenge for Champions League or to be fifth. You know, last year we finished fifth, and Kaylee's numbers said that we were basically the seventh or eighth best team in the league. And now this year we finished third, and we have numbers that are comparable to being, you know, the second, third best team in the league. So, this is nothing if not a step forward. And, you know, we've discussed all the problems with the squad all year long. Like, we're shallow and, you know, we need more depth in the center of midfield and, you know, all this other stuff. And let's buy some players and be better next year. Like, it's going to be like, this is great. This is exactly what we've been waiting for. You know, and for most of our tenure as Spurs fans, I don't see how you can be anything other than happy.
Yeah. There's one small thing on that. The last time that Spurs finished ahead of both Manchester clubs was in Division One in 1989-1990. That was the last time Spurs finished ahead of both City and United in the table.
That's quite
what
a...
What about
at least...
City and United and Chelsea?
I think it's the same season.
Cool.
Oh, fascinating listening.
It is the same season.
Michael, I want to take a different tack. We're looking forward. Last year, your Spurs were not the most inspiring team in the world. Your numbers had them a lot worse than they were. I mean, what, looking forward, obviously, we don't know what acquisitions we're going to make. We don't know what acquisitions other teams are going to make. But, like, what sort of should our expectations be for next year? Do you think that we're going to see just another sort of drastic change in Spurs fortunes? Do you think we're going to be able to sustain this level? Was the season a one-off? Like, what are you looking at going into next year within reason, obviously, not knowing who we're going to pick up?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it matters a lot who we pick up. It mm-hmm. matters a lot what kind of depth this team has, because we saw in the last couple of weeks that there are areas of this squad that if they aren't improved, Spurs are not going to be able would require a lot of luck to stay anywhere near the level they played this year.
In multiple competitions, yeah.
Especially in multiple competitions. So, you know, that matters a lot. But I think that the positives are really clear. I mean, the positives are the development of a bunch of players. You know, Christian Eriksen is now stealth one of the best players in the Premier League. And Eric Lamella and Dele Alli and Danny Rose is turning into a good player. You know, Jan Vertonghen.
No, he's not. I don't accept that narrative.
Oh, my God. We'll get to that in a minute. I think you're right. Those are all three players that have taken massive jumps this year. They figured out how to use Moussa Dembele, even if he was always this good. A coach finally figured out how to use him. Like
we've got a system which works. And, like the structure of our play, those are things that aren't going to get lost. You know, I think that I was talking to Mike Goodman in the chat room about how, like, the way that we press the ball, the way that if there's a loose ball and there's four guys near it, the guys have learned, they've been drilled that, like, two guys go and press the ball. One guy gets the tackle. The other two are already making runs. And one is creating an outlet. One is making a run to goal so we can counterattack. Like, there's a structure to our play which is far beyond anything I've seen at Spurs in my time as a fan. It's very exciting.
Are you worried?
Those are the sorts of things I think are entirely maintainable.
Are you worried at all about us getting sussed out? Teams have a full year of tape on us now. Like, I know in, like, just to give an American example, in the NFL they usually say it takes about a year for defensive coordinators to figure out a new offensive system. Are you worried at all about teams being more used to us now?
I think that the evidence, even in the NFL, is that that's more of a cliche than a reality. No system doesn't have ways to defeat it, but also no system is – I don't think that Pochettino's system is that inflexible. I mean, Pochettino has one way he wants to play, but within that there's a lot of little things you can do to change the way that people play – to affect the way that people play against you. There's nothing in it – it's not a gimmick.
Okay.
You know, this sort of structured high press, the sort of stuff that Spurs do, these are not entirely new ideas. Spurs do it in some interesting ways, in some different ways. But we've seen lots of high-pressing teams, lots of teams that do this kind of hard-working counterattacking style using the whole pitch. You know, these are not unusual things that we should expect to see fail. These are the directions in which modern football is heading.
Brian, we saw this year your favorite player, Heung-min Son, get kind of tied in knots with Pochettino's playing style. Probably a lot of it was due to injury. Probably a lot of it was I don't think he became the starter that we expected him to become, mostly because Eric Lamella didn't get sold and then became one of the most important players on the team. But Son was a guy who sort of floated in and out of the team, and I would say he was sort of one of our backups. He never quite, I think he was still a very good player for us, but he never quite gelled in the way I think we were all expecting. And a lot of that might have to do with the cultural adaptations. Do you think it's going to be a problem introducing new players into this team next year? Adapting the Pochettino system, which, as Michael said, is very structured and a very high discipline system.
I think that it certainly takes time to understand the pressing triggers and to get the rapport with the other players that we kind of saw with our real first 11 this year. I mean, you know,
which had no new Dele Alli was the only real,
except for, and Toby.
And Toby, you're right. Those were the two.
But I mean, Toby had previously played with Vertonghen, and I think center back rapport, as we saw from Kevin Vimmer coming in, is maybe much less important than rapport between the various bands of attack of midfielders and right. You know.
But I mean, Dyer was playing a new position. Like, yes, he had experience playing for Pochettino, but
They also had a full preseason, and that's the one thing that worries me about new signings with all these international tournaments going on this summer. Obviously signings are different, but if you're, Eric Dyer basically had all summer to learn how to play midfield last year. You know, Dele Alli was training with the team as soon as the last season ended. Like, I mean, you know, that is something that I don't think we can dismiss. Toby was signed pretty early in the summer, if I recall correctly. You know, and like I said, this year there's a bunch of tournaments. So that concerns you, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially the international tournaments. I mean, you're looking at the Copa America ending, I want to say mid-July, and then the Euros ending just after that. You know, and then you've also got, you know, if you're signing under 23 players, there's a potential that they're at the Olympics.
Also, there's a couple over 23s, depending on who we target, who might be going right to the Olympics.
And you know, there's I think that it's just going to be a weird summer to sign players. I mean, while you certainly would want players that are good enough to play for their international teams in tournaments like Copa America and the Euro, it's also would be kind of cool to sign guys that aren't involved with that. Like, let's sign some more Danish guys, or you know,
Nicholas Bentner,
or you know, Daniel Voss, or you know, anybody that's, you know,
Danish.
Yeah, Danish. Just basically any Danish players. Because to get those guys back after an international tournament and then to give them a few weeks off, you're looking at them coming back basically in August and then maybe not really even being fit by the time the first game rolls around.
Fitness worries me less than adapting to the system or like having an idea about the system, given how complicated it is.
The big thing to me is we need a midfielder in ASAP because we're without Dembele for the first four games of next year.
Well, at least that guy's going to get reps, so that's something.
So,
Ben, looking at our team, obviously we need depth, but our first 11 this year, is it good enough to compete in the Champions League next year? Like, you know, put aside rotation, put aside all that. If you're putting Spurs up against a quality Champions League opponent, is this first 11 good enough to compete?
I mean, I think so. I mean, look at fucking Man City, you know, got all the way to the semifinals and, you know, we whipped their asses this season. So
Liverpool was able to kick Dortmund's ass and we got our dicks handed to them. And I know there was rotation going on there, but.
Right. And I think, you know, that's key. We're talking about our first 11 here. Yeah. I think absolutely. We, you know, we'll probably get beat by like the Bayerns and the Barcelonas of the world and whatever, but, you know,
unless
we
sign Jack Wilshere, and then who knows?
Right, he'll have the one day out that proves his worth forever.
But you would feel comfortable rolling this first 11 out against any Champions League opponent, putting rotations aside and all that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we might not win, but I think, you know, we're not going to get embarrassed out there. This is not like we're going
to. It's not like we're playing Newcastle.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, shit could happen. But by and large, I am happy with this team.
Michael, what are you most looking forward to next season? Let's try to bring the mood up on this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, Champions League football under the lights is going to be fantastic. I'm really excited to see how guys develop. I mean, I think it really can't be overstated how young this team is. I was having some conversation on Twitter came up where someone was mentioning like the interest in like would we want a guy like Jesse Lingard, a guy who like got his first minutes this year with United, come out of the youth team, done some useful things, works hard. He's about 8 months younger than Eric Lamella and Christian Eriksen. You know, we've got a lot of guys who are just about hitting into their primes. You know, I think that Dele Alli literally has no ceiling. There's no reasonable limit to how good he could get and how good he might be next year. You know, there's so many players on this team. I'm really excited to see Harry Kane, see Christian Eriksen, see Eric Lamella, see Son Heung-min Son, see Eric Dyer. You know, all of these guys could make leaps in their game that are going to be just tremendously fun to watch.
Ben, who do you think takes the biggest step forward next year on Spurs?
Of
the players currently on the team.
Dele Alli. I mean, I think
you're not worried about second year slump.
No question. I mean, I guess that's a thing, but no, I'm not worried about it at all. I mean, he's clearly good enough. Like the way that a established international Champions League footballer like Son could not come in to replicate even a little bit of what he did, you know, I think is a testament to just how important he was this season. And he's, yeah, there's no reason he's going to get worse.
Brian, just to bring it back down a second, because this is a Spurs podcast, and last weekend did happen. Are you worried about anyone's performance at the Euros this year, either in terms of injury or getting themselves on radars that we might not want them on?
I don't think there's anybody really that I'd be worried about losing. I think if you're talking about players that we are in that are in danger of going somewhere else, I think
not right away. I don't mean because I think you're right. We have Champions League football. We're in the group stage. I don't think anyone's going anywhere next year. I think
the only person who is maybe who people will make the argument of being linked somewhere is going to be Vertonghen, but I don't think he's actually going to go anywhere.
There's part of me that's worried about if Dele Alli just has like a nuclear Euros, like that's going to accelerate things. And I don't think we're going to lose him next year, but you know, I worry about the year after that if he just, you know, or the World Cup year or whatever. But you know.
I mean, I'm worried about, you know, muscle injury for Moussa Dembélé, but I mean, he's missing the first month of the season basically anyway. So, whatever.
And Belgium never plays him, so.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I think I don't know. I think the team values everybody that they're sending to the Euros. I think, you know, maybe if Kevin Vimmer in Austria play really well, then he pops up on some radars and some people will say he can go somewhere and get starters minutes. But I don't think he's going to, knowing that the Champions League is now a thing at Spurs, I don't think he's going to be heading for greener pastures. So I'm not worried about any of the guys that are going anywhere.
Michael, keeping in line with your last question, who are you most excited to see play at the Euros this year? Was there any player on Spurs that you think that you're eager to see play in the international setting?
I mean, I think that it's going to be a lot of fun to watch Dele Alli. I think Dele Alli is almost certain to be starting for this England team. And Dele Alli strikes me as the kind of guy.
Jack Wilshere, come on!
Immediately get up for this. I mean, there's honestly a case for like a Dyer Wilshere Alli midfield against some teams. They should use Drinkwater, but they're probably just going to cut him because
they should use James Milner.
James Milner would also work.
Don't forget, Michael.
England is Spurs is going to be fun, but I'm trying to like ramp myself back. I'm very convinced that England have the fourth best team at the Euros and have a real chance to compete at the top level. But I'm also very ready to see the sort of England as Spurs dream turn into as like only two or three of them play.
I would also kind of like. So very selfishly, I would not mind it if England went out the group stage so our guys could get a vacation in.
That's true.
But I am just coming at it from a club over country perspective. I'm sure it's very exciting.
Oh, I mean, what country?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't like my own country's international team at this point. So,
not enough DeAndre Yedlin.
Yeah, no, that's the problem. Ben, which of the internet? There's a lot of tournaments this year. Not coming out necessarily from a Spurs fan, but what tournament are you most excited to watch? There's about three this summer worth noting that I can think of.
The Euros. It's always more interesting. I don't know. I don't give a shit about the Copa America.
The world's Olympics most corrupt. The world's most openly corrupt tournament.
And I really don't want to see Mexico, you know, win a tournament. There's a lot of chatter today about how people believe Mexico are going all the way, and I don't really want to.
That sounds like Mexico is going to go out in the group stage. So, you're not excited about the Olympics at all?
No, not really. It's like a fake tournament.
Yeah, the women's tournament is going to be fantastic. The men's tournament, who cares?
Yep, that's the way it is. I always convince myself into like, oh, watching the Olympics is soccer is going to be fun, and then even when they had it in England at places like Old Trafford and. You know, interesting soccer venues. It was still completely, the men's tournament was completely dreadful. But yeah, so there will be a lot of international soccer to watch this summer. And if you all are lucky or unlucky, as many of you would think, we might be back to do some podcasts about it. But stay tuned for that. So we have our final batch of questions from our listeners to sort of round off what was ultimately a great year for Spurs, but it's going to take us a while to sort of get there where we can appreciate it. Brian, our first question comes from Jack Geary on Twitter. He wants to know which player or players may actually be a double agent for Arsenal.
I think based on the results, it's clearly Ryan Mason.
He bleeds for the shirt and blood is red. So
yeah, obviously.
Stay woke.
Just general lack of attention to, you know, a team's attacking movement.
Or is it a lot of attention?
I mean, it could be. It could be.
He's also a 24-year-old who people think is a youth player, which is very Arsenal.
And his ankles don't work right, which is also very Arsenal.
I mean, the answer is obviously Moussa Dembélé. Like, he slept all season long and struck at just the right moment to hand Arsenal second place. I mean, he didn't even take Diego Costa's eye out for real, you know? Like, obviously he was half-assing it.
Michael, do you have any thoughts about what subterfuge is taking place at Spurs?
Yeah, I think that clearly it's Mauricio Pochettino. For basically the same reasons that everything was running along just fine, and then he just there's all these little subtle things all season long in preparation to destroy us.
I think
Pochettino did play in France, so
with Kieran Trippier. So how far does this go?
Kieran Trippier just like creating plans for Arsenal at Clairefontaine with all these players. What if Hugo's involved? And some of the Belgian players speak French.
Belgium is very close to France.
Oh my God. Harry Kane was an Arsenal youth player? Guys, it's basically...
Our whole team is actually Arsenal players, which means Arsenal blew it.
Oh my God. Yes, yes, we did it. We turned it around.
So sad.
I think if I have learned anything from television and the Americans in particular, it is that spies are marked by their terrible hair and their terrible wigs. And if there's anyone on this team who has terrible hair that is probably a wig, it is Toby. And I think thus Toby is clearly a spy on this team, as taught to me by the Americans.
Josh Anoma's hair is also horrible.
Yeah, but that's more horrible in a typical sports way. Like, Toby has something very
unique. He's like 13 years old, so.
Yeah, exactly. He's too young to be compromised. Unless his parents are Arsenal fans. And sleeping with West Ham's owner? I don't know. I'm losing this whole American. You're going to help me out here, Michael. All right. Moving on. We have a very important question from... Bradical 3, which, you know, I'll bet that was great in Tony Hawk. He wants to know if Pochettino's training regimen or pressing system is too rigorous for a full season. Ben?
I wasn't listening.
Oh, I actually have
Brian,
a good answer
you
to that.
Pay attention.
Yeah, I pay attention, and I had this theory early in the week, and I was going to write a thing about it for the site.
But no one on this podcast writes for the site.
So. No, no.
I something once.
You did. Well, did you actually write it, or was that written in? Like, was that your body writing it?
Who was exactly the literal death of the author? I think is an important question here.
Brian, what is your theory?
Well, I had the same theory that the Pochettino's pressing system is too rigorous, and that at the end of seasons his teams tend to break down. And so I looked at all of the seasons that Pochettino was a manager for in his career, and then kind of his team's record over the last 10 games of those seasons. And so, you know, he's managing some kind of middling Espanol teams, but he has a season where they win 8 out of 10 games down the stretch, and a couple of seasons where they go like 1 win, 3 draws, and 6 losses down the stretch. So his numbers at Espanol are kind of hit or miss. But then everything since he's been in the Premier League, you know, we're looking at, you know, 4 wins, 2 draws, 4 losses, 4 wins, 4 draws, 2 losses, like just pretty normal results. And then if you compare them kind of the points per game over those last 10 games with the points per game that those teams were earning over the course of the entire season, there's not really any sort of real tangible difference. So I don't think that that's an issue. I think that kind of just what happened here was he just really sort of mismanaged sort of the mentality of the team going to this last four or five games.
Good to know. Our final question.
Oh, great. Someone has actual analysis, and we're just like, all right, moving on.
Yeah, well, Ben's not listening anyway. So
what are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
How big's your snake now, Ben?
No one explained it. Just let it lie there. Our final question comes from Ben. I'm going to ask you, so pay attention. Comes from Jason Norbury on the site. He wants our advice. He was out of town and didn't watch the Newcastle match live, but he still has it on his DVR. What is the most appropriate method for killing it?
I think he needs to have an office space type party where, you know, they take the DVR out into the woods and just smash it to shit. Because it's, I mean, you have to kind of weed it out at the root. You can't just delete it off your system. That's not going to get it out completely. You have to just smash the thing to pieces. It's the only option.
Brian?
Yeah, that was actually literally my answer. I mean, I suppose you could try to return it to Comcast or Time Warner or Cox or.
Oh yeah, deal with their customer service. That sounds.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would almost be better than being forced to watch the game.
You would know because you did rewatch it on your TV.
Yeah, so I mean, if you go to a physical Time Warner or Comcast location and wait in line in order to return your set-top DVR, then yeah, that might be a useful exercise in humility.
I think he's approaching this in the wrong way. I don't think you kill the DVR. You kill what's on it. I think you need to record Eurovision, the Eurovision finals on it, and just like re-record it, like get it so it's just full of nothing but that, and then wonder why lightning's striking that baby and that guy who kind of looks like a girl is having sex with wolves on the stage that might be holograms. Like, just puzzle over Eurovision long enough, like try to logically break these numbers down, and I think that sooner or later you'll start to feel better. And you'll
also try to figure out why Australia is participating in Eurovision.
See, there's just we're already so many beginning the healing process. It's just amazing. Michael, do you have any thoughts on how he should kill his DVR?
Yeah, I mean, there's a problem here, which is that, like, you know, if you just save over and save over and save over, the way that the bytes get written into a hard drive, I think, these are technical words, ends up sort of being preserved, even formatting over and over. And so one solution is Ben's solution, just to destroy the physical object. But the problem is that, like, think of all of the bits that created that game. That traveled through your wires, that traveled through your walls. I think the tubes
of the internet.
The tubes of the internet through which this was sort of sluiced. I think that you really need to start thinking about getting into the walls of your apartment and destroying basically everything that the game came through. Because think what those have done to you. Think of the pain that they attempted to provide for you and how that makes you feel. Take out most of a sort of physical building, a dwelling space, will be I think cathartic. I'm considering it now. I'm just literally looking around Martin, thinking about what it would feel like. I'd probably feel pretty good. I also hate my landlord. My landlord's horrible. So
what Michael's saying is you can relieve your pain by coming to his apartment, and ripping it up. And pissing off his landlord.
Oh my God! So if you want to do that between July 1st and July 15th of this year, seriously, drop me a DM.
Slide into his DMs like the end of Spurs season, sliding into third place, and he'll help you out. I think we also shouldn't overlook the old ways, which are often the best ways, and you know, just sort of exercising the spirits, like you know, salt that DVR, like literally throw salt on it, bury it in a hole and set it on fire so ghosts cannot come back to haunt you, and then bury it, and then maybe build Michael's apartment on top of it and tear it down on top of that, and you will finally be free of this pain and living a better, healthier life. And on that note, I think we are done for the season, guys. Ben, you have any final parting thoughts on the year that was for Tottenham Hotspur?
Yeah. It gets better, maybe. The light is always darkest before the dawn.
The night is always darkest before the dawn.
That's what I meant.
Shut up, you.
I've got nothing. You know, it sucks, but hey, worst first.
It'll feel better eventually.
It probably won't, and that's kind of why we follow this team in the first
place.
Well,
it'll feel better for the rest of us. You've got family that's going to keep reminding you about this. So,
I mean,
good luck with that, Ben.
For any American out there who did not grow up in North London, like, you picked this knowing this was going to happen, so really it's your fault.
Brian, do you have any final thoughts on the Spurs season for our intrepid listeners? Just marvelous thoughts. Could not have said it any better myself, Brian. Michael, do you have any final opinions on the Spurs season?
Yeah, I mean, in the end, this was a good season. There's so much to be excited about our players, and we have, and as Ben says, you know, it gets better. Nothing deals with. This is about mourning. This is the thing about mourning is that for the period of time, you are mentally ill. People act in mentally ill ways when they are in mourning, and we treat it like it's a normal thing. We don't treat it like they need, you know, therapy or medication. And the only way that mourning really ends, it never fully completes. You know, there's still loss, but the only way it ends is with time. And we now have this summer and to sort of feel better, and then the mourning period ends, and then what we can look at is a really exciting football team heading into a season where we'll be playing in the Champions League, and it'll be super fun, and we'll have the time this summer to process and get there.
Michael, I think it's a very good point you made there. It is about time. We need to, you know, the pain is fresh today. It's going to hurt. The banter is going to suck. But we need to look at this. Eventually, the pain will stop because eventually the universe will experience heat death and no longer be able to sustain life of any kind. And only then will our pain be relieved. So we have that to look forward to. And on that note, for Ben Daniels, for Brian, for Michael Cayley, I am Skipjack. Come on.